moderates like myself and some of these other people who want the current proposal changed in targeted ways to close loopholes and to be more effective. Now, let's go to the bottom line. First, keep the inspection requirement. It protects guests, it reassures neighbors. It's already counted for in the $180 biannual fee. I just want you to know, $180 every 2 years so that you can earn thousands of extra dollars is totally a reasonable fee. This is no barrier to entry, especially compared to the current $4,100, which is really what has created the problem. BDS compliance is willing and able to perform these inspections. And to me, I don't think you were really saying that I forgot the term he used, but like gross danger violations, you would really want those to go by. He had a better phrase. And the difference between a short-term rental and a month-to-month rental is I don't think any of you would rent a month-to-month house without going to see it in person. The people on Airbnb who rent never see the house in person. They see pictures of the house, and they see reviews about the house. But there is no seeing the house in person. Now, I'm not saying that's an overwhelming problem, but I'm just saying that's why you would like a human being with some technical knowledge every 2 years to look at the property. Other cities like Austin, Texas, have this requirement. Now, second is something you haven't heard today, okay? And that is, you need to instruct the Bureau of Planning to implement the ordinance so that the license number of the rental must appear in all print and online advertising. The Bureau already agrees that this is a good idea. It's similar to the requirement for construction contractors. It protects guests, and it encourages operators to register in order to be competitive, because if there are 100 listings with license numbers and there are others that do not have them, the Airbnb guest will go toward the renters who display the license because it will feel safer. And it provides BDS a simple, objective indicator of non-compliance. Either you have the license number in the ad or you don't. And if you don't, you're out of compliance. There is no cost to doing this. And at the PSC hearing, everybody agreed this was acceptable, including Molly Turner. Now, the third thing is the most important thing. And that is closing what I call the Preno loophole. And in this case, Preno means primary residence in name only. The current proposal only requires the operator to be resident 6 months a year, and this opens the ordinance to abuse. As an innkeeper, I can let you know firsthand there is a fundamental difference between renting a bedroom in your home when you are present, which in the ordinance is the stated purpose, versus renting your whole house when you are absent, which really is a vacation rental. Now, Portland really needs a vacation rental ordinance. This is not a vacation rental ordinance. So that's why today I was so pleased to hear all the vacation rental people here saying this is a whole reality in the world that has been ignored. And we need to have a way that there can be unsupervised vacation rentals in Portland. Now, this does not mean so what we need is that there is a host resident during the guest stay. This is what current bed and breakfasts do. Doesn't mean they're 24 hours a day. Doesn't mean, you know, they can't go out. But it does mean they can't just turn over their keys to somebody and go away for 2 weeks. Okay? Now, this is because on Airbnb, there are private room rentals. Many of the people who addressed here are private room rentals who love renting rooms in their house just like I do. But there are other people who are entire place rentals. And they just are decided it's better to and more profitable to rent short-term than long-term. It's a business decision. It just makes more money to rent an entire place short-term than long-term, even though it takes a rental unit off the market. Now, a less effective alternative is proposed in San Francisco. In San Francisco, they're proposing that the primary residence means living in the property 9 months out of the year, or 75% of the time. So even if you disagreed with the one that I really truly believe will solve almost all the problems about horror stories and taking out rental housing, it will at least be better than what we have. These changes will make the current proposal work better and provide a good first step toward a comprehensive short-term rental policy. The second step, and this I wrote before this meeting, needs to be to address apartments and condos and develop a true vacation rental strategy. Do you have questions?
Frank, I just want to thank you because you've been very diligent over the past several months in keeping me informed, and I very much appreciate all three of your work on this. Mayor, I apologize. I have a previous meeting in North Portland that I need to get to.
I understand the problem.
Sorry for those.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I have a conflict at 5:30, so we'll go another 20 minutes if everybody else can stay that long, and then we'll have to adjourn.
So, Mr. Unger, thank you for
very
clear testimony.
Good work. Okay.
Are we going to have a chance to at least sort of let these people know where we want to
Yeah, we can. We'll take a couple minutes at the end, and then I think we also want to have a longer process of providing feedback to staff. But yes,
did you want some more neighborhood associations?
Let's take some more. Yes, please, more neighborhood associations if we have them. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Tamara DeRitter. I am a resident of Rose City Park. I'm a land use planner by training. And I am representing the Rose City Park Neighborhood Association as the board's vice chairman. The city of Portland currently spends up to 20% of its budget on affordable housing. This short-term rental amendment proposes to undermine the affordable housing gains funded by the city. I'm asking for a delay in the RICAP, in short-term rental, so we can study that issue further without losing our gains. Our 22-member Neighborhood Association board unanimously approved the letter that you have in opposition to the short-term rentals. And this was forwarded on to the Central Northeast neighbors, and they voted unanimously to support the removal of short-term rentals from the RICAP 6 so we can have more discussion. This Rose City Park letter goes further by itemizing 15 findings of fact in how this proposal defies the city's own procedures, municipal code, and comprehensive plan. As written, this amendment proposes to destabilize the single-family zone by allowing short-term rental commercials uses by right. If adopted, the proposed language opens the door for the tax assessor, bank, and real estate companies to assess short-term rental properties as commercial. It monetizes the potential income that could be generated by a property, driving up the home and rental prices by saying, oh, you can have the accessory dwelling unit, rent it out, go on. And then pricing first-time home buyers and long-term renters out of their homes and forcing them into East County or Gresham, where it's more affordable, but further away from jobs, family services, and into already crowded schools. As land use planner, it is required by our AICP Code of Ethics to speak out on behalf of those who are disadvantaged and underserved. Low-income residents that are barely making ends meet often need to work two jobs and do not have the luxury to take 3 hours off in the middle of their workday to come and testify. Please do not approve this amendment and drive up the cost of housing. Do not allow short-term rentals unfettered access, which it is right now. It's not homeowner occupied, No, there's no limit in how many can be in a block. There's some issues here. And we just don't want to drive out renters that have family with children and are elders who need services near in. As the vice chair of the Rose City Park Neighborhood Association, I ask you to remove the short-term rental amendment to allow us to have adequate time to review the needed information in making this decision. What information, you might ask? Where is the housing and economic impact study that will show that allowing our single-family residence properties to be run as motels will not impact housing prices and stability? What is HUD's opinion on giving funding to the City of Portland when they are adopting the short-term rental amendment, which undermines the very program that it supports in affordable housing? Why is the city in such a hurry to adopt this language for short-term gain of money through the hotel taxes, legalizing illegal uses, and then making limits on the staff time to study this in depth? What is the rush? Why not talk about this before we measure twice, cut once? In conclusion, I'm asking that you vote to remove the short-term rental amendment from the RICAP 6 process. Please do not make our neighborhoods into motels. Do not drive up the cost and destabilize our housing values. Listen to those of us who do not come before you seeking monetary gain. Listen to over 28 neighborhoods representing, requesting that you remove this amendment for further public discussion.
Amy, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because we have the benefit of your extremely thoughtful written testimony. And the two questions. One is, in your fourth paragraph, you list some of your specific concerns about monetizing income, pricing people out, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Don't we have the benefit here of looking at where this model has operated in other cities and perhaps get some information about whether that, in fact, has happened? And
well, there's actually two housing studies underway right now by prominent universities. And Andre Baum, at the question of how this is driving up or possibly not driving up costs of long-term housing. And Andre Baum had shared that with me. We don't have the conclusion of those studies as yet, but it would be good to have them.
So I think they're terrific questions, so we'll ask the Bureau if there's some additional data and studies. The second thing is, we heard from some folks today that because of this program, they, in fact, were able to keep their homes. And recently, you know, some staggering national data, over half of homeowners are struggling to maintain their homes.
And personally, I think that's great. I think it's
so
wonderful.
So how do you balance the fact that for some homeowners, this is what allows them to keep their property versus the concern you have, which you know that we share, about displacing people? And
right.
And
again, the language is too broad as it is. I personally would like to see it as owner-occupied property only, not operator-occupied mm-hmm. property. Because right now, it could be a renter of a property owned by somebody else. If it's owner-occupied, I'm full bore behind it, because then you are helping them sustain the ability to stay in place.
And so when Mr. Unger said that he thinks we should move to a primary residence rule that says at least 9 months, that's closer to what you think it should be in terms of having someone actually have it as a primary residence and not use it as a you know, rental apartment, rental
yes.
home?
Yes, I do. My concern is, as with him, making sure that there's going to be someone on site in the event that there is an issue, and some way to contact someone immediately to say, oh, there's a fire or there's an issue.
Of course, I'll tell you, I have renters on my street, mm-hmm. and there's no one, quote, unquote, on site other than the renter.
But you can look up the homeowner and give them a call.
You know, I'll talk to you about that later, because
okay.
I have no idea who owns the house on the corner.
I can. Portland Maps is
Portland
wonderful.
Maps, yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yes.
Okay. Other questions, Tammy? Thank you.
Thank you.
No, please.
Wait, no, not now, please. Outside.
Please.
Go ahead, sir.
We're talking about
No, disparity. no, sir. No, we can't do it this way.
Look around this room.
Hey,
there's
sorry.
There's nobody of color.
I know. We can't
to
do it this way.
I'd like to see you talk about seriously.
Hey, sir, we need to let you...
Have a nice day.
Okay, good.
My name is Greg Shifsky, Mayor Hales. Thank you for hosting this, and commissioners all. I just read this little phrase today, and I've actually heard about it before, and I really like the idea that this gets tabled for a while so that you have a chance to really do some fact-finding on this and not fast-track this through. This is an expression. Don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. And there's a lot of good to come out of this proposal that you've all put into RICAP through the ages. On the issue of safety, I learned recently about fireproof doors from a man that's retired from that business, very successful man, made a lot of money doing this. But these were doors that we all have seen in major hotels all around the world. They're very heavy. It takes a long time to burn through them. And a lot of the homes, especially my own, do just paper-thin doors that will not allow a person behind the door to escape out a window in time. So you need to look more carefully at all of the safety issues involved. There are a lot of them, and doors is just one of them. Especially when it comes to two-story homes, how do you get out of the second story when the downstairs is burning up? You know, I think your fire people need to come to the table with you guys, maybe behind the scenes, and really discuss some of these intricate details. Systems development charges. I've been a tax-paying homeowner for a long time, and I've helped build this city through my taxes through the ages. Is there going to be enough tax collection with these homes to take care of infrastructure that's in place now and must be maintained and built in the future? I don't know if this is being addressed with this RICAP 6 proposal. It doesn't seem to be, as far as I know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Claire Coleman Evans, and I represent the Brownmoor Neighborhood Association as their land use chair. And I'm also a concerned owner, and I'm homeowner, and I'm also a parent of school-aged children. I ask you that recap items 12, 13, and 14 are not minor changes to the code and zoning, as Andre, Robert, and Tamara have duly noted. These are major changes that will affect every single neighborhood. These are not minor policy changes that we are now having to sit before you, Mayor, and the commissioners. The I in recap is to improve. My biggest concern is with the safety. The biggest concern that I have about safety is this is a very simple process. You basically click a button. As Robert said, he advertises Hannibal Lecter. As far as the safety is concerned, we don't know who's going to be in our neighborhood. We do school safety zones, and we have police officers come to our neighborhood association. We have them come to our schools, and they teach you about stranger danger. Are they going to say, except for the home that is down by the street? So I really have some concerns about safety issues. And once this starts to take hold, you're going to have not so nice people that are going to take advantage of the system. And they are out there because I was actually a victim of one of them. So I asked you to please reconsider this. This is not a minor change. It's a major. And the safety and the protection of our neighborhoods is something that I've invested my money in. I live in Southwest Portland. I grew up in Portland all my life, and I was I worked all my life until I was able to have a home, have a family. And my home is my investment. And I would like to be able to have the security that when I go to my home, I don't have to worry about the stranger down the street. It's a big concern for me.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Any questions? Thank you all. And are there more neighborhood associations here? And I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to make some suggestions here, and I know there's some folks that still want to speak. So let me make this suggestion and see how it sits. One, I think there is an interest in moving the rest of the RICAP package forward, so I want to talk with staff about how we might do that. Secondly, given the number of issues on my list for follow-up, and I suspect on others, given the fact that there's no need for speed here, we want to do it right. I was thinking about perhaps scheduling a council work session 2 weeks from today, immediately followed by a continuance of this public hearing, or maybe followed a week later. In other words, I think we need some time as a council to talk with staff, do that in public, and get a bunch of questions addressed and technical concerns on the table. And then there's still folks that want to speak and that want to testify about this. But again, my feeling is the staff and the commission have queued this issue up. A lot of people are engaged in it. We don't want to take 6 months to deal with this, but we don't have to do it in a week. So my sense, and maybe we'll call you back up, Susan and team, while we talk about this. Again, I know there's still folks that are signed up and want to speak, but we're going to lose at least one more of us in 5 minutes or 10 minutes. That would be me. And I'm not sure about the rest of the council. So that's my suggestion. So what do you think?
The 2 weeks from now is a week. I'll be off that week. So I wonder if we could bump it to, Tuesday the 24th for a work session.
Okay. I was looking at the council calendar. Oh, you mean Tuesday the 24th for a work session, and then we'll figure out when we would put it on the council calendar.
No, sometimes we'd be doing work sessions on Wednesdays. I think
that would be great.
Historically, Tuesdays at least have less competition.
That idea.
Is that the 24th? Carla?
The Tuesday is the 24th.
Do we have anything scheduled that day?
There's no work sessions scheduled that I have.
Would that give you enough time if you've got questions, feedback this week?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure when I return from the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which I'm attending that day, so I'm afraid I would not get back that morning. I think I get back that afternoon. So I can put my questions in play, and the rest of you can have a work session without
me. Well, we schedule that Thursday afternoon?
We could do a Wednesday work session.
Also do it Thursday.
We have a Wednesday work session already on the 25th and a land use case on the 26th. But
how about the next week?
That would be July 1st, Tuesday, July 1st, for a work session.
Mayor. Over here.
Sorry.
Uh-oh.
Ben. There you are.
Oh, finally we hear from the lawyer.
Yeah, about time
finally.
You spoke up.
Oh, I am not back a puppet plan.
Okay, never mind. I'm back in time.
Two things.
Yes.
The first is 577, which is the rest of the RICAP, not the short-term rental. You've had the first reading today.
Right.
You could just continue that on to its ordinary second reading next week, and that would get you at your goal for that aspect of this proceeding. The second is that unless you're going to go through a process of re-notification on 578, you need to set that for a date certain hearing.
Okay.
So
which
you can
always move.
You can schedule a work session, but you need to set it also for a date certain hearing, which, yes, could be rescheduled. But for now, at least, it would avoid the complication of having to re-notify, which is in and of itself an expensive, time-consuming process.
So I think, actually, it will be possible for me to participate in a work session on the afternoon of Tuesday the 24th, if that's amenable to people. It means I know that this will wound you that I'll have to miss a meeting of the FPD and our board, but they can get by for one meeting without me, I think.
So should we try 2:00 on that Tuesday as a date?
So if we could have a council work session then and get questions and issues out either in email before that or in discussion that day, and then I'd like to set the next hearing for a week or two after that, so it gives the community a chance to see what we discussed and what's on the table in terms of amendments or revisions. That will also get us a chance to get a little further opinion on this building code issue, which about the multifamily and condo properties. And I'd like to get more clarification both from the State Building Codes Division and from our attorneys about that. So let's set a work session for 2 p.m. on Tuesday the 24th. and then set over, continue this public hearing to, what was the date you suggested, July 2nd? Regular, the regular council meeting on July 2nd, right?
We could do, 2 p.m. on July 2nd.
Which at this point is not occupied by anything.
Everybody's here?
Is that a Wednesday?
That's a Wednesday, the 2nd, July 2nd. And everybody's here.
Okay. And it's 2 days before a holiday.
2 days before a holiday, but still a work day as far as I can tell.
Sounds like a long weekend ahead.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll earn it.
So I guess before, were you going to, we're still going to field some questions? Or yeah,
we can pose some. Again, I've got.
Well, I guess there's only one issue I wanted to get out there, and that is, I mean, I have some other issues, but I guess the one I want to get out right now is looking into the notion of private certified home inspectors performing the home inspections rather than BDS personnel. I don't need an answer right now. I want to make sure that that's looked at as an option. It's probably, from some of the research we've done, it's probably a more affordable option. It may be regarded as, you know, perhaps a little less intrusive too, but achieving the same bottom line goal of checking safety.
What if we come up with a list of what the questions were that we heard, send them out to all of you in the next day or two, and then you add your additional questions back in so that we can have all those set, but that we don't start from zero, just having you.
Yeah, and we can do a bit of a lightning round on that now. I mean, I have on my list, and I think it's probably shared with others, the issue of vacation rentals as opposed to the short-term rentals, condos and apartments. We already know that one's on the table. Family members as managers. You know, in these hybrid situations, like where it's in an ADU or a multi-unit building, more discussion about the three-bedroom threshold, and then random
townhouses townhouses that are structured as condominiums, but to everyone else, they look like single-family homes that just have a different legal relationship. I'd like to know.
Yeah,
I'd like to know where the line is on that. And, by the way, any studies or empirical evidence about how other cities have dealt with this and what, if any, has been the impact on the local housing market? I think we would be well served to look at that, particularly in light of our comp plan and some of the other obligations.
Right.
Okay. All right. So I just want to say as we adjourn, this has been a very thoughtful hearing. I want to apologize to anyone that signed up who hasn't gotten to speak yet, but we've heard excellent testimony. And, you know, we've worked really hard as a community to come up with a zoning code that deals with lots of different ways to live. And I think this hearing has really illustrated that fitting that together with how people are now traveling is a challenge. But I think we've queued up a lot of important issues. We'll take our time. We'll take the advice about measuring twice and cutting once. And we appreciate you all. So, again, we will continue to a council work session on the 24th and a continuation of this public hearing on July 1st.
Second. July 2nd, 2 p.m. Second.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
We're adjourned for the day.
Are you going to be up?
Oh, well.